Well, as you know, as you've heard, today is annual meeting day, so it's a day of lots of talking, good talking, important talking, but talking nonetheless. So I'm going to give you a brief reflection today, because as Liz said earlier, we've come to the end of our Jesus Worth Following series. We've come together for the annual meeting later. We pause for a week before commencing the journey through Advent to Christmas. And so I think it's a good time to both be reminded of the reign and rule of Christ, as well as be on our knees in prayer, praise, and thanksgiving before Him. So I want to just say a few words to lead us into that. With all that in mind, it seemed apt to be to reimagine a feast that hails from the more traditional end of our Christian practice, the celebration of the feast of Christ the King. What's that all about, you might ask? Well, Advent, which starts next Sunday, is traditionally the start of the church year. That makes this Sunday the church equivalent of New Year's Eve. What should we be spending our time doing on the last Sunday of the year? Well, a little under 100 years ago, in 1925, the Pope at the time, Pius XI, established that at this time each year, churches should revisit the theme of the kingship of Christ. He was concerned at that time about growing secularism, an attitude of people putting their trust in things other than God. That believers are making decisions without considering God, that nations that consider themselves to be Christian nations were no longer leading from gospel principles. He thought that at least once a year we should remind ourselves and recommit ourselves to Christ's kingly rule. And I should add, that concept was later adopted by other Christian denominations, including our own. So, we live in a post-Christendom age, but I think that with that exception, everything that Pius was seeking to address is true of our own society today. And I think that even among Christians, when faced with big decisions, we can be inclined sometimes to draw wisdom from popular or secular thought rather than turning to Jesus in prayer. With that in mind, let's turn our hearts and minds to today's reading, and as we do, we may want to consider this question. What kind of king is Jesus? What kind of king is Jesus? In his interaction with Pilate in these brief verses from the Passion narrative today, I think we see at least two clear answers to this question. He is a king that, irrespective of his circumstances, knows who's in charge. God the Father is in charge of everything that is happening before him. That's number one. And number two, he is the king of truth. He's the king who knows who's in charge, and he's the king of truth. So let's look at a king who knows he's in charge. We know from the parallel gospels that at this stage of the narrative, Pilate is desperate to resolve the political dilemma in front of him. On one side, he has the religious leaders. On the other side, the crowd. He has a Roman charge, treason, squared at Jesus, and quite clearly a very innocent man in front of him. And it's his task to come up with an equitable solution that he himself is not particularly invested in. But he doesn't get to just call it a day, he has to do something. And so he comes back in and says to Jesus, "Are you the king of the Jews?" To which Jesus replies, "Is that your own idea? Or did others tell you about me?" And that gets him even more worked up. And eventually there's this back and forth, and Jesus eventually concedes the title of king. He says, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders. But now my kingdom is from another place." So if Pilate wants to make the charge of treason stick, he can now. Now consider Jesus, humanly speaking, he's in the worst possible position. He's in the most vulnerable position. But of course, he knows who's in charge. If this were a blockbuster movie, we'd be bracing ourselves for the villain to overcome the hero. But Jesus is calm and at peace. It's as if he were to say, I'm the king, that's why I'm here. Crucify me, this is all bigger than you anyway. Pilate's angling for a politically neutral solution, but there's no compromise. Either Jesus is the king of the Jews or he's not. But Jesus knows who he is and he knows whose authority he comes under. He's not going to let the politics of the day or Pilate's indecision impact him. Remember, the evening before, Jesus had already expressed his grief at what was to come. But now, having brought that petition to the Father, he was entirely ready to entrust himself to the Father's will. But Jesus knows who is in charge of what's happening. You see, with Jesus, there's no fence sitting. A choice has to be made. Either Pilate says he is the king and he proclaims him as such and releases him, or Pilate proclaims him as fraud and hands him over to be crucified. Now, let us make no mistake, Pilate's no softy. He sent many people to execution, and allowing unrest among the people to increase could cost him his job. And so this brings us to the next point regarding what kind of king Jesus is. He's a king of truth. Now, I don't know about you, but of all the biblical interactions where I wish I could be a fly on the wall to understand and perceive exactly how this interaction took place, I reckon this one would be up there for me. Because Pilate's response with a question to Jesus' comment that brings people who belong to the truth listen to his voice, Pilate says, what is truth? I don't know if that was the tone of his voice or not. I don't know how he said it. But he asked that question, what is truth? At which point, Jesus gives no further answer, but simply proceeds to his execution without making a defense or a complaint. What is truth? Well, some people in the room might roll their eyes as I say this, but depending on your age, you might be inclined to answer this question differently. Sociologists tell us that if you're those over 55 principally apply reason and logic. 1 + 1 = 2, always have, always will, truth is truth. Those 35 to 55 are far more likely to contextualize and relativize. 1 + 1 may still be 2, but is that the right question to ask? And is that even relevant to the problem at hand? And those under 35, including our little ones growing up now, they've grown up in the age of fake news and distrust of evidence-based research. Stereotypically, they're more likely to draw information from people who are not specialists in the commentary they are providing. There is much greater ambiguity, reconstruction, dialogue, and creativity in their approach to truth-telling. Does 1 + 1 really equal 2? And you might laugh, but I've seen videos online challenging that truth. What is truth? Jesus said, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one can come to the Father except through me. Irrespective of our age, our stage, what we've grown up with, the invitation to become a follower of Jesus comes with the message, Jesus is the ultimate manifestation of truth. He is truth itself. Reasonable, logical, irrespective of context, always relevant, free from ambiguity. Truth. But with Jesus, it's also open-handed. We can take it, we can walk away from it, and many do. Pilate, in one sense, discarded this claim. He washed his hands and had sent Jesus to his death. In a kind of an irony, isn't it? Like he washes his hands, so that he's not associated with his death, and forevermore we'll say the creed that Jesus was sentenced to death by Pontius Pilate, like it's been remembered forever. He made his choice, and we must make ours. If Jesus is Jesus King, and therefore every aspect of our lives, our character, our possessions, our decisions come under his authority, or is he not King? And if he is King, then how are we daily submitting our whole lives to him? The feast of Christ the King was designed to be our annual reminder that we are called to live under the kingship of Christ. And if, as we come to the end of one church year and into the next, if we find ourselves out of sync with that, then let's use Advent, let's use this time to review and repent and get back on track with Jesus. Because when we get to Christmas, we'll sing, "Make every heart prepare him room." Let's start that right now, not just in song, but with all of our being. Because if we are we're not just a celebrate Christmas for a day people, we're Christmas people. We're people who believe in the reality of Jesus coming and making his home among us, not just once, but for all time. If we are to be both followers of Jesus and people who witness his love and mercy and salvation to the world, we have to also be truth seekers, truth tellers, and truth doers. It means follow Jesus and love him, heart, mind, soul, and strength. We bring all of it to him. And like Jesus, we need to know who is in charge, and we have to know him who is the ultimate source of truth. Now, I'm getting ready to kind of wrap up, so I might invite the band like to come and be ready to lead us into worship after this. Over the past 2 weeks, both Liz and I have preached about being all in with Jesus, and that's where this message is landing too. However, today I want to invite us to do that, to be all in by being on our knees in prayer. The best way for us to yield our lives to Jesus is to bring every aspect of our lives, every hope, every dream, every heartache, every sorrow, every good thing, every bad thing to him in prayer, which is what we're going to spend the rest of this morning's service doing. I want to get out of the way and just be in prayer with Jesus. Jesus said, "I came into the world to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice." We've made a commitment. Those of us who follow Jesus have made a commitment to follow him, to listen to his voice. Are we listening to the voice of the King? And if we are, let's ask ourselves this morning, how are we bringing every part of our life in submission to him?